Hello and welcome to the fifth and final part of the Three Bid League podcast off-season team previews. For those of you who are just joining us now, we already went over 12 of the A10 teams across four different episodes. You can find them wherever you found this podcast. Today, we're going to wrap things up with the defending champion, Dayton Flyers, and the Duquesne Dukes. We'll also discuss the schedule that just came out this week and touch on a little bit with the NBA draft since that's coming up and we know Obi Toppin's going to go in the top 10. So without further ado, Matt, what was your biggest takeaway with the new schedule?
Yeah, Tyler, exciting that there's a schedule out there, and we are recording this a few days early, but that just came out today on Wednesday, the day we're recording this. And I got to say, I'm excited we have a schedule. I'm not happy about how it turned out because, to me, I look at this, it looks like a normal schedule you'd see in any regular season. And we clearly know by now this isn't going to be a regular season. You know, we have teams playing every 3 or 4 days as normal. They're going to be traveling frequently. And I just don't feel great about how this is going to turn out, especially when earlier today I just saw my first cancellation of the season already. I think the University of Miami just canceled its season opener, which is 2 weeks away because of a positive COVID test. So I think the A10's a little bit aggressive with their scheduling strategy, but I'm curious what you think about this.
Hey, look, this is going to go the exact same way that all of these other sports have gone. People are going to test positive. They're going to have to sit out. Games will be canceled. Games will be moved. But if they're truly committed to playing this right now, while cases are just skyrocketing, then I don't see any reason why this season won't finish. College football has been a complete disaster for 2 months. They're still going to finish the season. I don't see why college basketball would be any different. It's going to be a rocky road, but I fully expect us to get to the finish line.
Oh, I think at this point, like, the season's going to happen. I don't think it's going to be pretty. And they're certainly, you know, they're going to start. Whether or not they finish, it all depends on how things go the next couple months. What I would have liked to see, though, is a little bit more just resistance to travel. And I know, you know, Commissioner McGlade came out and made a lot of comments for Media Day this week about how she didn't want to have teams play back-to-backs on the weekends. And I understand that because, honestly, it feels like a low major thing to do, even though, you know, some conferences like the, you know, Conference USA, the Atlantic Sun, they're going with that strategy, I believe. I would have liked to see, you know, maybe groups of four teams go to the same pod for a weekend, and then you can alternate opponents, play a Friday, Saturday. Just anything you can do to lessen the travel, because right now, I look at the schedule, I see a whole bunch of examples where teams are going to be getting on a plane 2 or 3 times within a 10-day period. And I feel like we're just taking unnecessary risks when that happens. And to me, you know, I see one big reason why it's happening. It's got to be the TV contracts, because the A10, you know, in their press release, they're bragging about how many nationally televised games we have, which is awesome. I mean, as fans of the sport, I want to be able to watch as many games as possible, but I feel like they just really didn't want to put those contracts in jeopardy. I don't know if I'm wrong or not. That's just my theory. I just feel like they're taking on a little bit too much risk.
Well, part of the issue is when you create a conference that is just this geographically effed up, it's really tough to do things in a special way anyway. But, you know, the Wednesday games are always on ESPN Plus anyway. Like, they can get ESPN Plus broadcasts any day of the week, I would assume. So I do think that there's a way where you could basically kind of come to a compromise with what you said, where if you're going out to Philly, you play LaSalle on Thursday and St. Joe's on Saturday, or vice versa. Or if you're really concerned about the TV contracts, you play Sunday and Tuesday games on national TV anyway. You could go out to Richmond, play VCU one day, play Richmond the other. Like,
yeah,
this is not like the Patriot League where Holy Cross is playing Boston U 6 times because they can just get on a bus and drive to play each other in an hour. Like,
right.
The spread out makes it tough, but they could have thrown in some little tricks.
Well, yeah, the A-10, it's not a geographically centered conference, so that was never an option. My idea that I've been thinking of the last couple weeks, and I'd appreciate it if people replied to some of our tweets and, you know, let me know what you think about this, because I've been thinking about it. It seems like it would make sense. I think instead of playing these weekend back-to-backs against the same team, you should send a pod of four teams to one location for the weekend. So, you know, for example, say we'll have the UMass pod at the Mullen Center. And for that weekend, it'll be UMass, George Mason, Dayton, and Duquesne, all in the same group. Friday night, you play two games. Saturday, you switch opponents and play two more games. I feel like if you're only traveling once a week instead, there's just a lot less risk involved. And also with this idea, you have 12 teams playing each week. If you do three pods, that leaves two teams as kind of like a reserve system in case a team's not able to play because of a positive test. So I almost feel like, you know, if you give them enough notice, you could replace those games easily and just be flexible with the schedule.
And by the way, I understand why teams don't want to play back-to-backs in a normal situation, but you can just do Thursday, Saturday. Like,
yeah, I mean, that would work too.
Teams in like the Big 12 play Saturday, Monday all the time. Right. And play on one day off.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I'm glad we have a schedule, like I said. I guess one other comment. There are, I believe, 8 Friday night games, which are usually some of the biggest games of the season, just since they're on ESPN2.
There's so Those much all... Davidson.
There's a lot of Davidson. The only thing I wanted to comment on for that, I think it's a missed opportunity that they didn't put UMass in any of those games. I think it would have been a good chance to showcase Trey Mitchell, since he's probably going to be one of the most exciting players in the conference this year. He's really one of the up-and-comers in all of college basketball. Although I did see a bunch of UMass fans upset about his exclusion from a top 100 players list, so maybe not everyone thinks so, but I would have liked to see UMass in one of those big games.
I'm like 60% convinced that we're the only two people outside of Amherst that actually think this team's going to be good.
I haven't decided yet. Don't we have another week before we're recording our like predictions pod?
Okay, well, I think they're going to be good.
They're going to be fine.
At the very least, they will not finish in ninth, which is where they were at in the preseason poll.
Well, you know Trey Mitchell's good. He deserves that exposure. He's going to have a great season. But, oh, well. So, right, I have nothing else on the schedule. I had to get that off my chest.
I want to lighten the mood here a little bit, and this is the biggest thing that stuck out to me when I looked at the schedule. So, first of all, this year we end up with the perfect holiday lineup where Christmas and New Year's both fall on a Friday. So we're going to get the 3-day weekend coming off of Christmas and then coming off of New Year's Day again. Well, January 2nd, it's a Saturday. First of all, there's an NBCSN doubleheader. So we're going to run from about 12:30 to 8:30 without changing the channel. But the schedule is loaded that day. It's the second day of conference play. That NBCSN quadruple header is Duquesne at GW, Davidson at VCU, George Mason at Dayton, UMass at SLU is the nightcap. And then somewhere in the middle of that, there's going to be a St. Bonaventure at Richmond game on CBSSN. I'm already excited for that day. I went through this whole schedule. I don't think there's another single day that matches that high quality of games.
Yeah, that sounds really good. Coming in a good time too, right after the holiday on a weekend. So yeah, that would be a lot of fun. I mean, seeing these games on the schedule too, it does get you excited. I don't think we've really spent that much time on the podcast talking about potential cancellations, and I don't really want to focus on that. But, you know, if the A-10 can take these protocols as serious as possible, and we get the majority of these games played without any interruptions, it should be another great season. And I don't want to, you know, bring down the mood or anything. There's been a lot of excitement too with Media Day this week being stretched out over a few days. Seems like a lot of people, I mean, I guess the coaches should be optimistic, but, you know, it does seem like there's a lot of talent in the league this year.
All I ask for this entire schedule is that on that golden first weekend day of games, that CBS just does not put Bonnie's Richmond during UMass SLU, because those both have a chance to be signature games for the season. And I don't want to have to double TV it. I want to really, really focus in on both of them.
Yeah, I agree.
So get ready to not leave your house on January 2nd, although, you know, I'm sure most people probably won't anyway for a multitude of reasons. But you got plenty of distractions there. And speaking of distractions, well, not really a distraction, a pretty great event. The NBA draft finally happening 5 months late. By the time people are hearing this pod, it'll be probably a day or two off. If you're listening later in the week, maybe it's just an hour or two away. It'll be Wednesday. And we know Obi Toppin's going to be a lottery pick. I think a lot of the buzz to him potentially going in the top three has mostly faded away. There's a few people who are still talking about it, but at this point, I just don't see it happening. And, you know, I've watched every NBA draft in full since 2006. And I've never really truly cared where actual players went for sake of the player. I'm always just thinking about it for sake of the team. And Obi's the first guy that I've really just deeply, deeply rooted for that's now going to be a lottery pick. And I'm now thinking about where could his career be headed 5 years from now? And, you know, I've always thought that he's super ready-made to be a good NBA offensive player immediately. He has so much to work on defense, though. And he's also a guy who's going to have to end up in the right system. So when I kind of look up and down the lottery, like, I hope that, God, he doesn't end up on the Knicks, for example, or the Cavs. I just don't think that those are good basketball situations for him. And those are the kind of places where you see guys' careers get ruined because they end up in a crap situation. My biggest hope, I've said this for months, I don't think the Warriors will take him at two. But if they trade down, he would play 20 minutes a game for a title contender immediately with an incredible mentor in Draymond Green, with a fantastic coach in Steve Kerr. That's the kind of place where your career could potentially take off. And then just looking down the board, I didn't want him to go to the Bulls initially, but they got a good player development coach in Billy Donovan there now. That's a place where he could end up getting some good teachings. You know, Billy Donovan will take care of his good friend, Anthony Grant's star pupil. And then the Pistons at seven, it's just a complete crap show there right now, but they just desperately need anyone who can help. He'll play huge minutes. And once again, you got a coach who's very good with young players in Dwayne Casey. So I'd be rooting for Warriors first, but then other than that, the Pistons or the Bulls, wouldn't mind him going to Charlotte either. That wouldn't be too terrible.
Yeah, I'm a super casual NBA fan, and you're certainly much more knowledgeable than me. The Warriors would be so much fun. Like, I would immediately get on the bandwagon. That would be great. What picks? Do you know when the Atlanta Hawks pick? Because I know they've got DeAndre Bembry still. I think they still have Jalen Adams. That would be pretty fun.
So that's the only team in the top eight that I didn't mention, I guess, besides the Timberwolves, but Obi's not going number one. The Hawks are at six. The NBA rumor circles have been hot for weeks that they're trying to trade that pick, but I actually think that that would be a horrible spot for him because they already have John Collins, who I actually consider to be kind of one of Obi's biggest offensive comparables, and Clint Capella. So they already have two other kind of pick and roll, catch and dive big men on their team. And I just flat out don't understand where Obi would fit in that situation.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, you know, as someone without really a favorite NBA team, I'm just hoping he ends up in the best situation possible. And really, you know, this is the first time I've been excited for an NBA draft. I mean, I was a little bit excited to see Kostas potentially get picked, and I ended up staying until the end to watch him get drafted last in the second round. But yeah, this is exciting because at Dayton, we don't see this very much, or in the A-10, we don't see this at all in the lottery, not for a very long time. So it's exciting, and I just wish him the best.
Yeah, absolutely. Really, that's how I'm just going to be watching the top 10, is just sitting there and hoping for the best situation for Obi. He's going to go after Anthony Edwards, which, if you watch the Maui game, doesn't make any sense at all.
Shame. But
I guess Anthony Edwards is good. I can't say I watched any bad team. I can't say I watched any bad SEC basketball last year. So,
yeah, and I also can't say I watched any bad. I think Australian basketball. What country did LaMelo play in?
Australia.
Yeah, look, I'm just gonna put this on the record, being extremely uneducated when it comes to the draft. Obi's gonna be better than LaMelo. Come on, I watched Ball in the Family for like a season and a half, and LaMelo had no work ethic. He was sleeping in on game days, staying up late. Obi doesn't have a dad following him around making these outrageous claims. I just think Obi's going to have the better career. I don't know what you think. But
I will say, there's so many mysteries, especially to people who watch big-time college basketball. This year's draft is just – it's so weird. And, you know, I can understand the allure of picking, say, James Wiseman over Obi, or picking there's two really good European guards that most of us haven't seen that have just some fantastic highlight tapes. I could understand that too. And even Edwards, I know he was just absolutely terrible against Dayton, but he's the kind of guy that NBA teams are dying for. Taking LaMelo Ball over Obi would just be moronic.
I've actually heard, isn't he trending down a little bit too recently?
Obi or LaMelo?
No, LaMelo. I thought I heard he was
slipping. Obi actually probably will go ahead of LaMelo at this point, but
good. I hope so. Yeah.
This is a bad draft at the top, and Obi honestly might be the biggest sure thing in this entire draft to at least be a good rotation player. His ceiling's not as high as a lot of these guys, but I'm confident that as long as Obi just doesn't end up in a disastrous Knicks situation, that he will be a good NBA player for a decade.
Hey, maybe he could resurrect his hometown team, though. Or I guess that would be the Nets, but I don't know. I don't want him to go to the Knicks.
That's the one thing that we can completely agree on. And the other thing we can completely agree on, it's time to give the Dayton Flyers their 15 minutes.
Right.
So if there's anyone out here who is tuned in for this episode that didn't listen to any of the last four, we throw each team on the clock for 15 minutes, talk about who's back, who's gone, just kind of some general thoughts with the team, and then we close it out with each of our critical questions that we believe that the answers to those questions will dictate how the team plays this season. So here we go. The 18-0 Dayton Flyers. As we mentioned, Obi Toppin is gone to the NBA draft. Ryan Mitchell, Trey Landers both graduated. And the sad news last month, Dwayne Cohill tears his ACL. He's out for the season. But Jalen Crutcher, Rodney Chapman, Ibby Watson, they're all back. Jordy Shamanga should be starting instead of coming off the bench this year. And there's a whole lot of interesting transfers and freshmen competing for minutes at the forward spot.
How can you call yourself a diehard Dayton fan when you forgot Jerry Matos, who is grad transferring to Charlotte, our old A-10 friend? Jerry's going to be missed this year.
Wait, Jerry was still there last year?
He was like the ninth man, and I think, I'll talk about him later, maybe. But no, Jerry Matos averaged 8 minutes a game. Yeah, he was there. That's okay. Other than that, it was a good intro for Dayton. All right, where do you want to start?
I guess we have to – I guess it just makes the most sense to start with Jalen Crutcher. Preseason, a potential preseason All-American – he's actually getting that buzz from people outside of the A-10 circles. So that's how you know it's legit. I know Jeff Goodman had him on one of his three teams. I don't know. He was just utterly and completely fantastic last year, to the point that for half the season, he was actually probably more valuable than Obi. But now he basically is going to have to change to continue his ascent. Last year, they asked him to be Steve Nash, to just be in control of the flow, to be the distributor, to set everyone else up, and to be as unselfish as possible. And he is an A-plus at that. But now you're asking him to be more like Isaiah Thomas, either of the Isaiah Thomases, where he's not only now responsible for the distribution aspect, but he's going to have to be responsible for a heavy bulk of the scoring load now, and not just in crunch time. And it's such a heavy ask for anyone. Crutcher already has so much on his plate, so much on his back, that asking him to bump up his shot production too that's going to be tough. But if he can do it, then God, he is an All-American.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, for Dayton to even come close to reaching the heights they did last year, Jalen Crutcher needs to reach that level. And I think you're right that once we got deeper into conference play, I think we went from thinking of Crutcher as like, oh yeah, he's up there with the other great point guards in the conference, to, okay, this is the clear-cut second-best player in the conference. Because at the end of last year, I think he was. I don't think there was a question. And he did such a great job just getting the most out of being around such an elite offense, because he wasn't selfish at all. I mean, you can't be when you're on one of the most efficient teams in the country. But it is going to be different this season, even though, you know, he's always been a guy that can take shots. I mean, he's bailed out Dayton many times shooting at the end of a shot clock. He can hit those tough shots. Now he might need to do that even more, just because he's not going to have quite as much help around him. He's not going to have someone where he can just throw the ball up to the rim and he'll have a teammate to come down with it and dunk it home. So there's going to be an adjustment. And I really do think that's going to be a big issue for Dayton. Like, if he can be that huge leader and start, you know, even increasing his scoring from where it has been, that's what Dayton's going to need for the Flyers to reach their ceiling.
I'm not talking about potential, so calm down, UMass fans. But at this very moment right now, the two best players in this conference are, in some order, Jalen Crutcher and Jordan Goodwin. I think Trey Mitchell's probably the odds-on favorite to be player of the year, but it actually probably should be Jalen Crutcher. Right now, if I was starting my team from scratch right now, I'd rather have Crutcher than anyone in this conference.
I agree. Yeah, I mean, you know, I'd say Trey Mitchell, like him being a sophomore, I mean, eventually, you know, he could be a potential All-American too, and maybe this year. But yeah, I mean, right now, I think it's Crutcher, just since he's a senior. I mean, he's got a track record of three great seasons with Dayton, so I agree. But I don't know. I think the second one, I mean, I don't want to stray too far away from Dayton. I think there's a lot of guys you could argue for the second best. In fact, I'd probably pick Mitchell. But anyways, let's get back to Dayton.
So we just got the preseason poll the other day. Dayton gets picked third.
Right where we want to be.
Crutcher, first team all conference. But then nobody down ballot. And this is where I don't think people are really actually thinking about the cause and effect. And this is what we're trying to do with the questions. If Dayton's going to finish third, given that they lost not only Obi, but three critical, critical role guys, I don't see a universe where they finish third without someone else being an all-conference level player. So if you really believe that Dayton only has one of the 18 best guys in this conference, then they're not a top three team. Now, I think they very well could have to have another all-conference guy. And so that's kind of this isn't even my question. This is just my question to you is, what do you see coming from E.B. Watson this year?
Yeah, I want to definitely talk about E.B. now. And I'm actually so glad you brought that up. I texted you like right away, how does George Mason have more all conference players than Dayton? That makes no sense. And you're right. That is a huge omission. I think that the voters didn't recognize anyone else on the Flyers. If they're going to be the third best team, they need to have someone aside Crutcher. And that kind of leads me into, I think, my biggest question for this team. Are Ibby Watson, and then I'm also going to include Rodney Chapman since he was a starter last year. Are Watson and Chapman just great role players from last year's team? Or are they actually studs that were just a little bit farther down, not the depth chart, but they were not the first options offensively, and maybe they were overshadowed by the guys that are no longer on the team? Now, I'll start with Watson since you asked about him, and I have extremely high hopes for Ibby this year. I think he showed time and time again last year, he's another guy like Crutcher that can create his own shot. He's smart about it. I don't think he forces anything, even though sometimes it looks difficult, but he's just so smooth that I think he can make those difficult shots a lot easier for himself. He's another great three-point shooter. If you leave him open, I know he had a cold stretch last year, but I think he could be as dangerous as anybody just about. And I just think overall his ability to score from so many places on the court, whether it's at the three-point line or at the rim, I think that makes him such an exciting weapon to have on offense. So I really think that's going to be huge for Dayton. He needs to go from, you know, around 10 points a game last year as the sixth man to one of the leading scorers with Crutcher.
So at this time last year, we still didn't know a ton about Ibby Watson. He was coming in from Michigan at the time. And really the one thing we knew is that he had a beautiful shot. Mm-hmm. He was going to be a dangerous, dangerous dead-eye shooter and a top-level scorer. And quite frankly, he was. Now, what we didn't realize was going to happen was that the starting five was going to be so good on offense that his role was going to be somewhat reduced. And so I have extremely high expectations for him. I don't see him having any issues stepping into kind of that number two, like Blake Francis-ish role, where maybe he's not the best guy on offense necessarily because it will be Crutcher, but I could definitely see Watson leading the team in shots and it not being a problem that he leads the team in shots.
Yeah, I almost think I'd rather see him. I mean, Crutcher's, you're right, he's the best player, but he's also just so effective as a passer and floor general. I don't want to see him force anything. And I think Ibby might be better suited to, you know, lead the team in scoring, and that allows Crutcher to be more of a facilitator. And we'll have to see. I mean, he did, you know, part of it is just he wasn't on the court quite as much as all of the starters, so that hurt his scoring. I felt like he was aggressive enough, though, last year. And, you know, if you just give him more minutes, I feel like he really can't score a ton of points this year, but that is huge. I like the Blake Francis comparison. If he can just be that lethal scorer alongside a great passing point guard, Dayton could very well have one of the best offenses again.
So you mentioned Chapman too, and I think overshadowed is the perfect term. And I think it's different from Watson, where Watson's role was literally repressed by the talent around him. I'm not sure that Rodney Chapman is necessarily going to be asked to do more this year, but I think he definitely was overshadowed. I think his contributions got shoved to the side. I'm saying this as one of only two people to put him on their all defensive team for the media awards last year. And what he was able to do locking down high level scorers, you think about Anthony Edwards, you think about Jordan Goodwin. This team was not the same on defense when they were playing a high-level guy when Rodney Chapman was on the bench. Him getting in foul trouble almost lost them a few games. And I think this year he's finally going to get the proper recognition for it. As for on offense, I'm not sure there's much else there for him. He's a good secondary playmaker, but there's not a ton to his offensive game. He's just an unselfish guy who plays great one-on-one D.
Yeah, I mean, he's, you know, defense is his strength, that's for sure. Although I will say, I mean, I don't think many people would realize he did shoot 36% from three, which is, I mean, well above average. But you're right about his defense is excellent. He's one of the best defensive guards in the conference. Although that is kind of a hole for Dayton now because they do lose Dwayne Cohill for the year, who is also a great defender. And I think that's something they've got to fill. You know, who else can step up with Chapman? Because, you know, you're also losing Trey Landers and Ryan Mikesell, who were themselves great defenders.
So that leads us perfectly into my second biggest question. My first one was just, is Jalen Crutcher going to be able to transform this year? Because it's, as we really talked about, can he go from just being the perfect pass first point guard to just being the all-around stud that they kind of need him to be to stay in the top four? My second question, are any of these newcomers ready to contribute on defense immediately? Because this team is going to miss the Mike Solander's Cohill combination. Personally, I think a lot more than most people are realizing. Those guys were the linchpins of the defense. You have two guys in Trey Landers and Ryan Mikesell who I would honestly say most teams are lucky to get one of those guys in a generation, being like a four-year swing. Dayton somehow had two at the same time where they're just the perfect unselfish dudes who always got open, always locked down on D, and always rebounded. And there's a lot of interesting, super talented guys ready to replace them, but they better be ready on the defensive end immediately, or else this team's going to play a lot of shootouts, and they're not set up to play shootout games.
Well, then, you know, not just limited to defense, but like on both ends, Dayton's going to need a lot from their newcomers because there's only five returning players, and two of them, Jordy Chimonga and Chase Johnson, let's face it, they're huge question marks. And, you know, especially Chase Johnson, a guy that was limited to eight games last year. I'm excited he's back for Dayton, and if he stays healthy, that could be a huge bonus that we don't really know about yet. But still, you know, same with Jordy, who just didn't get a lot of playing time because he was blocked by an All-American and also he couldn't stay out of foul trouble. Those guys are questions. So the newcomers are going to need to step up for sure. I think one guy that I really want to talk about in terms of improving Dayton's defense is Emi Nwokji, who joined the team last spring. He originally committed to Florida State University, and so he got to practice last semester. This is a guy that won his Defensive Player of the Year award in his high school conference, obviously coming in with high-level Power 5 offers. So I think he's a guy that can play right away. He seems like a pretty athletic guy at 6'7". And also, Dayton just doesn't have very much depth at wing. So out of all the freshmen, I'd say he's probably going to lead in minutes if I had to guess right now. And hopefully he can step up on defense.
The one thing that I feel good about with the newcomers, and I know Jordy Chimonga's not a newcomer, but he's going to see a big minutes bump up, is between him, Nwoje, and Chase Johnson, this team should still be very good on the boards, even without the three guys that they lost.
Yeah, and I'd add in Mugai Sissoko, too, the 6'10 redshirt freshman that sat out last season. I mean, he's a big physical body. He came in to Dayton pretty well regarded as a rebounder. In fact, that's the strength of his game. So I'm not too worried about those guys. I mean, I think they can all be good rebounders. Might be tough. I mean, you know, missing Trey Landers is huge because I think he epitomizes the whole board man gets paid. Like, they're going to need someone to replicate that hustle if they can. But in terms of the post players, you know, rebounding was never a strength for Dayton last year, but it also wasn't a huge weakness either. And I think it should be fine, but those guys are going to have to step up.
Yeah, and where I think we're really going to see the loss of Mikesell and Landers and Cohill is going to be just a lack of flexibility and a lack of malleability. And that was part of what made this team so special last year is in any situation they could – you could really ask Mikesell or Landers to just do whatever. You could ask Dwayne Cohill to guard whoever. And so in games where, say, like Rodney Chapman was in foul trouble or on the other end, a team's double-teaming Obi, you could move those three guys around into basically whatever situation you needed from them. And, you know, we're going to have to see some flexibility from a guy like Nwoje, who, by all accounts on the highlight tapes, is actually a very flexible dude. But we'll see if he can do it with the X's and O's the way he can getting up.
All right, well, St. Louis got like 18 minutes, so I'm not cutting it off just yet. We'll get to Duquesne soon, but you know, that's actually why I wanted to bring up Jerry Matos earlier, just because I feel like, isn't he that guy that can come in for 15 minutes a game and play great defense on the wing? I feel like, you know, he didn't do anything on offense last year, but I kind of think Dayton could actually use him this year, which I understand why he transferred to get more playing time, but I just think wing defense, there's not a whole lot of certainty. Another guy is RJ Blakeney, who comes in at 6'6". He seems like a pretty athletic guy that can rebound a little bit, but I mean, aside from him and Zimmy, there's not a whole lot of guys that I could see playing the four for Dayton.
Well, Chase Johnson.
See, that's actually kind of my other question, which we'll do it quickly. I've seen a lot of people, including John Rothstein, you know, other writers, say they give Dayton's projected starting five, and they give the five returning players. I'm not sure I want to see Chase Johnson and Jordy Chimanga start together, unless if Chase gained a jump shot this year, which, you know, he didn't really have one last year. I kind of think we saw 2 years ago when Dayton played Obi and Josh Cunningham together, it seemed like it wasn't always that smooth. And if it's possible, and if like Zimmy or RJ Blakeney's good enough to play the four from day one, kind of like to see that lineup a little more just to get more skill offensively. But I don't know what you think about that.
Maybe as the year goes on, I'm actually kind of assuming Chase Johnson's going to start at the beginning of the year. Remember, he actually started next to Obi last year.
Yep.
In place of Trey Landers. So yeah, I think it'll be Chase Johnson. I don't think he's going to be, I don't think Grant will be too concerned with the floor spacing, because like you said, Rodney Chapman's a 36% 3-point shooter.
Yeah, he can shoot it.
You have Crutcher, you have Ibby Watson. That's some pretty good shooting from your perimeter threesome. You can afford to give up some floor spacing from your four.
Yeah, we'll see. It's just something it's kind of tough to know what this lineup's exactly going to look like. And I think a lot of it does come down to these freshmen. I guess one more guy I quickly want to talk about before we move on. We did not mention USC transfer Elijah Weaver, who's a 6'6 guard. Right now, he is not eligible for the season, although I think there have been talks from Anthony Grant about trying to get him a waiver that came after Dwayne Cohill's season-ending injury. That could be a big game changer, just because Weaver, you know, he's a highly rated recruit, played okay at USC, didn't do a whole lot there, but, you know, that would just give Dayton even more depth and more options for their lineup. So we'll see. Right now, it sounds like he's not going to play, but, you know, there's still a couple weeks before the season starts, so things could change there.
I think he was literally the only D1 transfer this year that didn't get a waiver. So
yeah, pretty much just him and Okoro from St. Louis, but he's recovering from an injury.
Oh, and yeah.
To the best of my knowledge, Weaver's not hurt. So I'd honestly be surprised with the NCAA's ruling that everyone's going to get a free year of eligibility, unless, you know, there's a health issue or something, or, you know, maybe that was just part of their agreement that he'd sit out a year to develop. It seems like it would be beneficial for him to try to play this year, but I don't know the situation. That's just, you know, me speculating, but if he does play, I think that would definitely raise Dayton's ceiling.
Yeah, I think we're just going to have to move forward assuming he's not playing unless the day comes where he gets his waiver. So,
yep.
So we close things out here. 14th and final team in our offseason previews, the Duquesne Dukes. This team basically brings everybody back. Marcus Weathers, Sincere Carey, Michael Hughes, Maceo Austin, Lamar Norman, that's their whole starting lineup. The sixth man, Tavian Dunn-Martin's back. Austin Rotrov's back. Amari Kelly's healthy. They really only lose Bailey Steele, who is kind of a big loss, both in his size and just what he was able to contribute to Duquesne down the stretch, both on the glass and from beyond the arc. But they certainly got the pieces to replace him. And you know, I'd say this is probably the most optimistic Duquesne fans have been about a team going into the season in the 21st century.
Saw an interesting stat about Duquesne. Since Keith Bambrot took over, which this is going to be his fourth season, Duquesne's preseason ranking has improved every year, and Duquesne has also outperformed that ranking every year as well. So Duke's picked fifth this year that just came out this week. I don't know if that means we can pencil them in for a double bye, but if the trend continues, this could be a pretty nice season for the Dukes. And I agree with the optimism. If I was a Duquesne fan, I'd be excited too.
Basically, you look at every guy on this roster, and this was a team that played pretty well last year. Really, every guy coming back, you can see a pretty easy path to improvement. Sincere Carey was good. He had some great moments, but he just still lacks so much game-to-game consistency, especially from a scoring standpoint. I mean, he only averaged 12 points a game last year. You can say the same about Tavian Dunn-Martin. He's a guy who sees his three-point shot come and go so often. Marcus Weathers was probably the most consistent guy for the first 3 months, and then he got hurt. And while he played through it throughout February, he really looked like he had taken a step back. Michael Hughes can't stay out of foul trouble. So basically going up and down this roster, every guy really has a chance to come back better than they were last year.
Yeah, that's something I've been thinking about, actually. Yeah, I think one of the big stories of this entire offseason is that Richmond and St. Louis were good last year. They bring everyone back. They're the favorites. And I think about it, you know, Duquesne wasn't that bad. I mean, they were a step below those two teams, but not by that much. I mean, they beat some impressive teams. They beat St. Bonaventure. They beat VCU. They killed St. Louis twice. Why aren't we that excited about the Dukes? I know they were a couple games behind. They didn't get the double bye last year, but, you know, you're right. Bailey Steele's the only player of consequence that they're losing. And if those players, if the starters improve, as you mentioned, that they can, I feel like we could be looking at a sleeper here to do very well in the conference.
Yeah, and I'd throw St. Bonaventure into that group, too.
Yeah, I forgot.
And
right.
When you look at all four of those teams, you take their three best guys from each and just kind of look at those 12 players. Sincere Carey has by far the easiest path to a jump up in level of play. I think that's actually why people are more down on Duquesne than the other teams, is because right now it just feels like they don't have a superstar. Marcus Weathers played like a superstar for a bit, but I think at his best, he's probably just a really, really good number two. Sincere Carey averaging 12 points a game last year was honestly just nuts. He's better than that, and he actually showed us multiple times last year that he's better than that. He's had so many consistency issues from game to game, and you know, it's kind of like with Kyle Lofton, where you often just see Sincere Carey become passive. He's trying to get everyone else involved, and he just kind of doesn't realize that there are nights where he shouldn't be the point guard. He should be the scorer.
Right, and I think, you know, I'm betting on Sincere Carey this year, I'd say. Way back when we did our Ranking the Players podcast, I had him, you know, higher than both of you guys, which I probably had him too high on my list, but I feel like he's gotten overshadowed a little bit compared to the other top-tier point guards in the A-10. And he's, you know, he's not a Jalen Crutcher or a Jacob Gilliard yet. But, you know, for all the minutes he's put in his first 2 years, I mean, this is a guy that's been a huge part of Duquesne's improved success they've had since he joined the team. And if he can be more aggressive at times, if he can improve that consistency, I think he really could be right up there in that top tier of A-10 guards. And I do think that is where Duquesne could see their biggest path to improvement if he becomes an elite player.
So that takes me directly into my first question, just plain and simple. Is Sincere Carey going to be one of the 10 best players in the conference this year? He has the capability to do so. I think he had the capability to do so last year. He just has to be able to carry that aggressiveness from game to game and not just kind of pick and choose. If he is, then they're very much in the heat of maybe not only just double bye contention, but potentially conference title contention.
Yeah, I really just think it comes down to consistency with him. You know, he's never been a super reliable scorer. He's just been right around low 30s for his three-point shooting. And yeah, sometimes it feels like he's just not aggressive enough trying to score. One way also, though, I see where he could improve. As a freshman, he was one of the best ball hawks in the conference. He had a ton of steals, and last year that just kind of inexplicably went way down. So if he could get back to being one of the great defensive guards in the conference too, which he was good last year, but I think he could be even better than he was. But that, I mean, I do think that's an important point. Duquesne does need, you know, another top-tier player. I'd say Marcus Weathers, even though it feels like he doesn't always get that reputation around the A-10, he's kind of a borderline top-10 guy. I think if Duquesne's going to be a true contender, Sincere Carey needs to be there too.
Yeah, and I'm actually more concerned about – I guess concerned would be the wrong word. I think his path to a step up this year is actually more on the offensive end. And he's about a 34% three-point shooter. He could probably bump his volume up a little bit. Only 134 threes taken last year. I don't think he would have any problem if he shoots one or two more threes a game. Should be able to keep it around the same percentage, if not bumping it up a little bit. Over almost exactly six assists, or sorry, a little over five assists a game last year. That's pretty good. He'll probably bump that up a little bit naturally anyway because of the talent around him getting better, which we'll touch on in a little bit. But he shot 47% from two. He took less than four free throws a game last year. I think if he's literally just more aggressive going to the hoop, he'll see both of those numbers improve. I'm not even sure that's a skill issue right there. I just want to see him be more aggressive in big moments and really just take things into his own hands.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I don't have his stats in front of me, but just watching him play, it seems like he's great finishing at the rim compared to other guards. So I agree. I think he needs to make the most of that. But while we're on the topic, you brought up his three-point shooting. I think that was kind of one of Duquesne's weaknesses last year. They're not as big of an offender as St. Joseph's. But for a team that wasn't very good at shooting threes, Duquesne took an awful lot of them. They were only 32% as a team, which is below average in the country. I just think one of my big questions is who's going to be that reliable three-point shooting guard? Because right now, I mean, we've seen Carey, he's fine but not great. Tavian Dunmartin can light it up any given night, but he's probably the furthest thing from consistent. Lamar Norman Jr. and Maceo Austin weren't that great of shooters last year, and then Duquesne also loses one of their best shooters in Bailey Steele. So, you know, I think in terms of offense, three-point shooting seems to be the biggest area I see where as a team they could improve.
So that's actually my second question too, which is when do the hypothetical shooters become real shooters?
Yeah.
Lamar Norman has had me like under a hypnotist spell for 2 years now. Everything he does in his game is so smooth, so pure. Like if you just watched tape of him, you would think he's one of the best players in college basketball. Like just everything about his game is so beautiful. And then you look at the season stats and he's 34% from three.
Yeah.
I don't even think he has to do anything different. Like I'm kind of not sure why he continues to just be a below average 3-point shooter. He has everything that's required to be great at it. Maceo Austin, it's not quite the same naturalness, but he's got a decent shot too. And maybe one of those guys turns it around. If not, they got two guys, Tyson Acuff and Jet Roding. I don't know. I'm going to butcher those two names till the Duquesne radio guys clear it up on the first game for me. But they got two guys coming in who were just complete dead-eye snipers in high school. And the biggest problem that has plagued really all of these Keith Dambrot teams in his time here is that they have not gotten good complementary shooting at all. And it's really just the one element that this team is missing. They don't need any of those four guys to be great. They just need two of them to be good shooters. And they should get decent enough defense out of all of them. They'll get good defense and good rebounding out of Austin, but they should get good enough defense for all of them to stay on the court. But they need them to snipe.
Yeah, I don't think defense is a huge concern. Duquesne was one of the best defensive teams last year, and I think that will probably continue. But I am glad you mentioned those two freshman guards coming in. Acuff is, I think, kind of under the radar in terms of the A-10 because he's a guy that had Big Ten offers, and he also had an offer from Xavier. So, you know, I don't see him getting talked about quite as much as some other guys, but he seems like someone that could come in and contribute right away. And then if you watch Jet Rosings high school tape, he's basically Tavian Dunmartin with his aggressive shooting. I don't know if he's going to get away with this starting out as a freshman in Division I basketball, but I mean, he's willing to take shots from anywhere on the court. And, you know, if he maybe he's not quite as highly rated, he just had some A-10 offers, but you know, if he could come in as an elite 3-point shooter that he's billed as, that would be huge for Duquesne, I think.
Yeah. At Tyson Acuff, he was a finalist for Mr. Basketball in the state of Michigan. And personally, I'm trying to run it through my head real quick, but I'm not sure I've been as excited about a Duquesne recruit coming in since Melquan Boulding, who, by the way, was a top 35 star.
Yeah.
Tyson Acuff, not quite the same expectations, but he was one of the best shooters in high school basketball last year in the country. And just when you think about what this Duquesne team is missing, if he can just come in and shoot 38% from three, I don't even care what else he gives them. Like, that would just be so monumental.
Yeah, since we're talking about Duquesne's freshmen, and you're the Duquesne fan, do you have any idea why they have, like, 19 players on scholarship again this year? Or what? That's what it feels like?
Dembrot is doing some sort of wizardry on that team.
He's
where this is now, God, is it it's either the third or the fourth straight year where I'm pretty sure they have more than 13 scholarship guys. I don't know what's going on. Like, someone on this roster that we all think has a scholarship doesn't. And yeah, this has been happening for years too, where like last year they had a bunch of extra big men who we thought they were all redshirting. And when you did the math, like, it put them over 13 guys. So I don't know. Like, there's some wizardry going on.
Yeah, it is.
One of these freshmen is a walk-on, and we just don't realize it.
I mean, Duquesne, they do have some guys transferring or that transferred out, but they bring in seven freshmen and also get Amari Kelly back from an ACL. So, I mean, even with a solid returning core, there's also a whole bunch of guys coming in this year. And, you know, even if just one or two of them end up being quality A-10 players, this could be, on paper, one of the deeper teams.
Yeah, and, you know, they're going to need Carey to step up to really give them the boost that they need to get to the top. I think that they also are going to need a little bit of a step up from Michael Hughes in his final season. But even if Marcus Weathers and Tavian Dunmartin just give them a repeat of what we saw last year, there's so many other guys here that give you a reason to be optimistic about their ability to improve. I think that's kind of why people are a little bit more down on Duquesne in general. We keep asking, why is this team going to be better than last year? And I think people look at the top guys and kind of figure that they'll be about the same and don't realize that there's so much young talent on this team that even if, for example, let's say Maceo Austin doesn't get better this year, I actually think he will. But if he doesn't, then there's four other guys who could come in and immediately take his minutes.
Yeah, I mean, just, you know, looking at – I mean, I've seen Duquesne fans say, like, this is our greatest recruiting class ever. And you always see fans saying that about their teams. But just looking at – we didn't talk about their front court players or wings, but they've got Andre Harris, a 6'7 big man, who had an offer from TCU and some strong mid-majors. Toby Okani is a guy that had an offer from Minnesota and some of the upper tier A-10 schools. And he's a guy that could maybe get some minutes on the wing. I do think, you know, on paper, there's some pretty solid newcomers joining the team. And you never know how it's going to quite work out. But, you know, with so many different options, it feels like Dan Brott's a good enough coach that he could throw a lineup together that can win some games in the A-10.
And by the way, Dan Brott, before this, with the exception of Maceo Austin, really hadn't been landing huge recruits. His two best guys he's gotten so far are Sincere Carey and Eric Williams Jr., who's now at Oregon. If Duquesne hadn't stepped in, Williams was probably headed to a MAC school. Carey would have probably ended up even lower than that. So he's shown to be an incredible eye for talent, and at Akron he certainly showed the same thing. So now that he's starting to bring in higher rated guys, there's a lot of potential there.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he has had some success with his recruiting so far, despite, you know, usually it's guys that are falling under the radar. But I don't know. I mean, I don't have too many other specific things to say about Duquesne. And at first, you know, I was a victim to this too, like way back in the spring. I kind of slept on Duquesne. And now that I look at it, I am feeling decent about this team. I think if they can address the three-point shooting weakness that we brought up where, you know, they need a reliable shooter. If they can do that, I think this could be a very solid team, especially because, you know, I mean, with Weathers and Hughes, those guys are going to play nasty defense inside, and that's not a huge concern, unless Hughes gets into foul trouble, which we conveniently did not bring up.
Well, so we're going to.
Okay.
So
yeah, we can go over for Duquesne too.
We have to close this out. We basically didn't talk about the three seniors, and you know, I think Marcus Weathers just. It's not a sexy thing to talk about Marcus Weathers' game. He plays like the old man at the YMCA. And you know what? Playing like the old man at the YMCA got him on an all-conference team last year.
Yes, it is.
And I think the reason why we haven't brought him up is there's no reason to believe really much has changed. Like, even from his sophomore year to last year, he was the same exact guy. He just got better at the things that he was doing. He's a matchup nightmare for so many teams in this conference who just don't have the proper power forwards to guard him. He's a beast on the boards. And if he's healthy, he's going to get them 15-8 no matter what. Tavian Dunn-Martin, you know, I think this is a guy where if he's going to improve, he's just going to improve on what he already does well. He's just going to be better at it. He's a great spark plug off the bench. Maybe he can kind of stop those three-point shooting swoons where he'll just go 0 for 3 games in a row. To me, I think Michael Hughes is going to be better for one reason only. He only played 24 minutes a game last year.
Mm-hmm.
If he can clean up his fouls in any way, shape, or form, that's a huge impact for this team because they just don't have a big man who can do what he does. Last year, he finished second in the conference in blocks, 9th in steals. Nobody came even close to that combo. I know the Duquesne fans are screaming that why is he not on the all defensive team? I'm going to second that. I put him on my all defensive team.
Yeah.
And, you know, really when you think about it, those stats do go hand in hand. Part of the reason why he gets so many blocks and steals while also getting so many fouls is because he's a complete and total wild man on defense. He's a guy who hits on 16 every single time if he's at the blackjack table. And his wildness is part of what makes him great. But if he can just dial it back a little bit to the tune of, I don't know, one less foul every 3 games, that's just so monumental for Duquesne because they got to get his minutes from 25 up to 30. Those 5 minutes could be the difference between finishing second or third and finishing fifth or sixth this year.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think about this, like, I think right now the A-10 has a guy, I don't know for sure where Gilliard stands, but I think we have someone in the conference that's in the running to set the all-time steals record with a great season potentially, but, you know, if Michael Hughes can stay out of foul trouble and play 30 minutes a game, I think we're looking at the defensive player of the year, because his steal and block numbers, among other things, I mean, he's just an all-around great defensive player. He just can't consistently stay on the court. You know, you go through his box scores, he had some games where he didn't even play 15 minutes because he just couldn't stay on the court. And if he could just be more disciplined, that would be such a huge boost to Duquesne, especially losing Bailey Steele. They don't have quite as reliable of a backup center now, so I think there's a little more pressure on him.
Yeah, if it's one possession and I'm up by 2 on defense, he's the big man that I most want in this league for that one play.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I some guys are actually probably better to have for a whole game because of the foul issues. But if it's one possession, knowing what he can do as both a rim protector and as a very versatile guy off of switches, he's the best guy for a one-play scenario of any of the centers in this league.
Yeah, I think you're right. And it looks like his foul trouble – actually, wait. Now I was looking at the wrong number. Yeah, it was the same. No, he had five fouls for 40
minutes. It's really, really, really bad.
Too many, yeah. I mean, he did get better on offense, though, too. We didn't really talk about that, but, you know, still can't shoot the ball well, but – shot 60% on two-pointers, so that's not bad.
I will say last year, while his foul numbers really didn't get much better, the fouls themselves actually got better. His sophomore year, he way too often just committed stupid, like, trying to make a trap at half court and he reaches in fouls. Last year, it was a lot more in the middle of action trying to make a play fouls. So he was at least committing smarter fouls, but he's – yeah, I mean – We hit the two main points with Duquesne to start it and end it. Yeah, can Carey be a superstar? Can Hughes clean up the foul trouble? Because if those two are better and Weathers is the same, they're finishing in the top four.
All right. Well, I think I'm out of things to say. Are you done?
Yeah. So thank you guys for listening in again. As we mentioned earlier, if you want to hear the previews for the other 12 teams, just go back into the archive. By the time this episode drops, they will all be there. This, however, is not the end of our preseason preview. We will be back the opening week of the season with a special guest, a guy that you have heard on here before will be coming back. We're going to talk about bringing all of our predictions together and some of our favorite hot takes for the year. Matt? The Power 8 hot takes are coming back.
I can't wait for the Power 8 hot takes. I've been holding off for a while. But yeah, that's going to be fun. It's been great doing these previews. Been a lot of fun to dive in and research these teams the last couple weeks. I'm glad we did Dayton and Duquesne last because, as predicted, those went over the time limit, but that's okay. We knew that was going to happen, and we prepared for it. And yeah, you know, it is exciting, even though I did have those concerns at the beginning. It's a good thing that we have a schedule out there. I'm just so excited for the season to start. I really hope we can, you know, make it happen with as few interruptions as possible. And if we can, I know we say this all the time, but the A-10 is looking good this year. So Dave Paulson himself said the fifth place team could potentially get a bid to the NCAA tournament. So we might be changing our name in a good way this year.
Yeah, and you know what? We've tried to spend these last five episodes really trying to be as objective as possible to look at really kind of the different scenarios as to how these team seasons can play out. And I think our goal with these episodes was to just try to educate, not only to educate the listeners, but to educate ourselves. Next week, we start saying crazy things and we put our names to our predictions. And we haven't recorded the episode yet. I'm already excited, and I hope you guys are too. So be sure to give us 5 stars on iTunes if you've enjoyed the episodes. If you have any things that you believe we should talk about in our Predictions or Hot Takes podcast, just send those over to us. You can tweet us at @3BidLeaguePod or send us an email, number3BidLeague@gmail.com. Everybody stay safe out there.